Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Well, it's been 4 months since President Donald Trump launched his tariff war on his trading partners. And despite some pushback from powers like China and Canada, talks have been ongoing with other nations, including the EU. The EU's trade chief, Maro Sefcovic, will fly to Washington, D.C. today for further talks with his U.S. counterparts. But as that new August 1st negotiation deadline looms, where does Ireland stand? And if things don't go to plan, what are the risks in us turning to countries such as China and other markets for future trade opportunities? Well, Professor Mary Gallagher is Dean of the Keio School of Global Affairs at the University of Notre Dame and also a Chinese political expert. And Mary is speaking at the McGill Summer School later today, and she joins me now to discuss this in more detail. Mary, you're very welcome to the programme.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I'm delighted to have you with us today because, as I said, you're speaking later on at the McGill Summer School in Glenties. And caught in the crossfire, Ireland, Trump and the China dilemma is the topic that you will be addressing. Will you tell us why you believe the EU is in a bit of a tight spot right now?
Yeah, the European Union is very, very caught in the middle between the United States and China. And I feel like at this point, the EU doesn't really have a lot of leverage over either country. I think it believed it had some leverage in market access with China over the last couple of months. And that was completely shown to be false once China really flexed its muscles around critical minerals and rare earths, which started to put production even in some European factories at risk. I think that really taught the EU that it doesn't have leverage over China. And, you know, with the Trump administration, I think the EU is maybe more quietly negotiating and trying to use the leverage it has. It hasn't retaliated yet. But that's very dangerous. You know, Trump can be very unpredictable with the way he uses tariffs.
Well, he certainly can. And we saw how he jumped from the threat up to 30% in recent days. And as I mentioned, the deadline for that is on the 1st of August. Do you think that is a realistic prospect, given what the retaliation might mean for US consumers?
You know, I think, yes, so Trump is taking a risk, and I think the risk is either the U.S. consumer responding to higher inflation and, you know, maybe even not being able to get the products that we want. And then the other risk, of course, is with the markets. I mean, he does respond when markets look fragile and when the bond market goes a little bit wonky. He is responsive. Europe just hasn't used the threat of retaliation, at least publicly, to the extent that it could. It could certainly try to do that. It would also inflict some pain onto European economies as well.
Mm-hmm. And what lesson can we learn from how China dealt with Donald Trump? And you mentioned their strategy around the rare earth minerals, and they prove that they have great leverage, as you said, on that front, but also tit for tat with the tariffs when they came. China very much stood up to Donald Trump. What lessons can the EU take from that?
Well, China showed the United States not only the power it has with rare earths, but it also showed that even though the Chinese economy is also not in a great condition right now, it hasn't been in a great condition for some years, that Xi Jinping is certainly willing to sacrifice the Chinese economy in order to stand up against Trump. And it was a real turning point for China to use rare earths. It used it only once before in a major way against Japan in 2010. We're 15 years out. Europe and the United States haven't figured out a strategy on rare earths. So the fact that China used that weapon and used it very, very effectively, I think we're in a totally different ballgame right now. It's no longer Europe being able to play off China against the United States, because both the United States and China have shown Europe that Europe is really caught in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Do you think other parts of the world now will start investing in mining rare earth minerals because we see just how much power China wields on that front?
Yeah, of course. And I think that's happening, and it's been happening for a while. The problem is that China has such strong market power, it can influence prices, and it can make it very, very difficult to produce rare earths in a kind of market-driven way. And it just hasn't been the case so far that other countries and companies, you know, private companies, have the wherewithal to really invest in a big way and maybe sacrifice profits for a pretty long period of time. Of course, the other issue on rare earths is the environmental impact. And so if we want to invest in those types of minerals and doing the processing outside of China, we're going to have to deal with the environmental impact as mm-hmm. well.
Which will be significant. And China has really reaped what it's sown in that regard in terms of the environmental impact there, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. Yes.
Mary, what's your view on Ireland and the EU looking at diversifying into the Chinese market? Because that has been part of the strategy, certainly here in this country, that we've been saying, right, where else can we go to sell our products rather than the United States? Is it wise to look to China?
The EU seems divided on that point, and I think that will be another point of leverage for the Chinese government, picking off European countries one by one. Germany, of course, is clearly wavering on that point. It has huge economic interests in China. Its automotive industry really can't survive without what it has already done in China in terms of production, particularly in electric vehicles. You see Hungary and Italy also being very inclined to cut a deal with China and make concessions. The EU as a whole unit is not speaking along those lines. The EU has taken a very strong and critical line across on China. So it's not really clear to me what the EU position is. And if EU countries, including Ireland, just go off in their own directions and pursue their own, as they see it, self-interest, then the EU itself will be even further weakened.
Well, and that I mean, many would say, is Donald Trump's aim, isn't it? To see countries peeling off and trying to go it alone, to break down the unity of the European Union.
That is definitely the sense that I get being in Europe and talking to people here, that it's really about destroying the European Union. I can't say what the intentions of the Trump administration really are. I think a lot of people in the United States, even people on the Democratic side, long been frustrated with the European Union on things related to trade and also defense, now look and say, look, this is the Trump with his, you know, very hard line and his hard-nosed negotiating strategy and really, frankly, his bullying has finally gotten Europe to act. Mm-hmm. And so maybe what it will do is drive Europe closer together rather than split it apart. But I think that's really up for Europe to decide.
Right, that'll be a decision that will have to be made. And what about Ireland enhancing trade with other BRICS nations, including Brazil and India? I mean, what do you see as the possible pros and cons in that move?
Yeah, India in particular, with its manufacturing capacity really increasing. I mean, Brazil has other advantages. I think every country, and including the EU, will be looking to just hedge their bets. I mean, you can't depend on the United States. You can't depend on China, clearly. And it's just about looking for other markets and hedging risk as much as possible.
And Trump's trade war with China, it's a major factor when it comes in general to the new tariffs, isn't it? I mean, that's really where his focus is. And he has cut trade deals with countries like Vietnam and Indonesia. Do you believe that his strategy there is to hobble China?
Yeah, I think the United States wants to weaken China's sort of central role in the global economy as much as it can. It wants to, in some ways that, you know, talk about driving manufacturing back to the United States. I think that has its limits, particularly in a lot of the products that China produces that can be diverted to Vietnam or to Indonesia. So looking for countries that have similar profiles to China in terms of labor-intensive manufacturing and costs of labor, but looking for alternatives.
Knowing Chinese politics and the Chinese economy and how it works there as you do, how do you think China will continue to address this? Will we continue to see the aggressive stance on rare earths, the pushback on the tariffs? What do you see coming from the Chinese?
I think the use of rare earths in that very, very public and dramatic way was a real turning point for China. Of course, it was a weapon that China, now having used it, has also shown that sort of China's stance as, you know, they're going to be the that they're going to be the supporter of globalization and the leader of globalization as the U.S. turns away and turns more isolationist. China now has also shown that it has the capacity and the will to be just as bullying as Donald Trump has been. So it's a real turning point for China in terms of its leadership role in the global economy. I think what it's shown to countries like in the EU and including Ireland is that neither the United States nor China are dependable partners anymore.
It is a difficult position, though, for other countries to be in. You know, in order to appease the world's biggest market,
yes,
America, you've got to anger the world's biggest trader, China.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. It's caught in the middle. Europe is caught in the middle. It doesn't have a lot of leverage. And I think increasingly it looks less unified than it needs to be at this really critical point.
I suppose the leverage that we have is the size of the EU, right? As a customer and as a trading bloc.
Yeah, and I think it was trying to use that against China. And then once China demonstrated that it can actually shut down production in Europe, not just in China for European companies in China, but for European companies manufacturing in Europe, particularly this is in the automotive industry, China can shut those production lines down if it doesn't allow access to critical minerals. So that has made Europe's market, the size of the market and access to the market, less important.
I wanted to ask you as well about education and Donald Trump, because we had that ruling earlier in the week that the Supreme Court, the US Supreme Court, said that his administration can continue to lay off hundreds of Department of Education employees, which undoubtedly will be a further blow for schools and universities across the United States. And you work in one of America's top universities, and I do understand that that's a private entity. But in general terms, Mary, what will be the impact of the government strategy, and what impact are you seeing it already having?
The Trump administration's stance on universities is having two really major impacts, not directly related to the Department of Education cuts, but to cuts elsewhere in the government, particularly at the NSF and in the National Institutes of Health. The first, of course, is the political impact, the crackdown on academic freedom, using accusations about being anti-Semitic as a way to change how universities operate, what kinds of students they let in, what people say or don't say out in the public on these really important foreign policy issues. So that's one thing, which is just academic freedom and the governance of universities, which by and large, up until recently, the U.S. government was very hands-off on.
Mm-hmm.
The second, and this is more important for U.S. national power, is the complete collapse of the partnership between universities and the government on basic research in science and technology. So Trump has started to cut federal grants. In some cases, he's frozen federal grants entirely to some universities like Columbia, Harvard, Northwestern. And it's really not clear in the long run what will happen to scientific research at American universities that is by and large driven through grants and funding from the federal government.
Mary, thank you very much for joining us today, and we wish you well at the McGill Summer School, where you're speaking a little bit later on. That's Professor Mary Gallagher. Now, in the UK, some news just breaking. The Labour Party government has just said it's going to give 16-year-olds the right to vote in all elections. This is under proposed new legislation, that breaking in the last few minutes. And we know that that was a topic that has been up for discussion over the years here. Let's see if that move with our nearest neighbour pushes that conversation along. And our colleague in the RTÉ newsroom, Conor Hunt, is reporting that President Michael D. Higgins is going to release an album of poetry later this year. It's going to be called Against All Certainty, with 10 original poems set to music from Miles O'Reilly. It was recorded in Oras on Uachtaráin, and you'll know President Higgins has published 4 books of poetry, but this will be the first recorded project in the spoken word. Now, a little later on, Dermot Ferriter will be here to talk about some presidential controversies of the past, and I'm sure our current president will get a mention in all of that too. Up next, we're live in Tip ahead of the big match this weekend.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.